BC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Oh, I'm doing good. Like I said, I've been watching some college basketball lately, getting ready to put together a bracket that will be dead by noon Thursday.
I think all of us would pretty much be in the same boat, you know, especially this year. Looks like not a lot of powerhouse teams, so there should be a lot of drama. You know, the quality of basketball, though, might leave a little something to be desired.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, you're hearing that from everybody talking about the draft right now that's coming up. There are some, you know, Ben McLemore and Cody Zeller, and there are some guys who are going to make nice pro players, but there's not a lot of scouts sold on the idea that this is going to be a really great draft here. And I should add, the last time they said that, Kyrie Irving came out. So
yeah, so we might want to ignore the scouts and just pay a little bit of attention to what actually happens in the tournament. All right, well, let's get right into it here. We got a couple games last night, not exactly the most marquee of matchups, but we did have some interesting developments. In the first one, we had the Spurs holding off a late rally by the Mavs to get the 92-91 victory. Big news in that one was Tim Duncan, 28 points and 19 rebounds. First time since 2005 he's had at least 28 points and 19 rebounds in a game. What are your thoughts on Tim Duncan? He's just had really an incredible season, and health seems to be, you know, mainly the reason why.
I think health is a lot of it. I mean, he's so skilled, and he's the kind of guy, because of his fundamentals and because of his style of play, where, you know, a decline in athleticism hurts him a little less than it does other guys. You know, Vince Carter or someone whose game drops off a lot more. So I think him being healthy is part of it. Look, the Spurs right now, you know, yeah, they've had some pretty horrific losses in the last few weeks, but I think that that's more just about focus and then resting guys than anything else. They're playing defense and moving the ball. I really think they are a legitimate threat to the Thunder in a 7-game series, more so than they have been in the past few years.
Well, you mentioned the horrific losses. I mean, it's tough to figure. Obviously, Tony Parker's missed the last few games with an ankle injury, but he's working his way back. He'll be back, you know, before we know it, next week or two. You know, you mentioned the losses. So they lose by 30 to the Blazers, and they lose by 24 to the Timberwolves. But in between, they beat the Thunder by double digits without Tony Parker. So, you know, who knows what exactly you're going to get from the Spurs team. But, you know, the fact that they do have the system rather than a superstar-dependent roster, that's what makes them, I think, so dangerous.
I think especially in the regular season, I think it's come to hurt them in the playoffs a little bit. But like I said, I think that they're doing this season a lot of the things that they didn't do the last couple when they were more beatable in the playoffs. We'll see. You know, the Thunder are a better team, I think, than they were last year. The Thunder handled them in the playoffs last year. But I think the Thunder, you know, or I should say the Spurs, have they made a big enough jump? I early in the season wasn't sold on that. I'm more sold on it now. I'm more sold that this is a team that can really push them. And, you know, like I've said before, I heard from somebody in Houston that they think the Spurs are a better threat to the Heat than the Thunder just because of how they move the ball and move off the ball and can diffuse the pressure. But that's a long way off.
Yeah, they'll have to get past Oklahoma City first. I mean, really, when it comes down to that matchup, you just have to get low percentage shooting games from Russell Westbrook. Well, actually, first Westbrook, right? Like, he shoots the ball more than Kevin Durant does. You know, if you can get Russell Westbrook into one of those, like, 7-for-26 type games, you're going to have a good shot, even if Durant goes for 35. But like you mentioned, you know, a lot of people are saying the Spurs are the best matchup or the best chance we have to see the Heat go down in the playoffs or the finals. But, you know, it's a long way off, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and frankly, the way the Heat are playing lately, I'm not sure it really matters.
Yeah, they're on another level. We'll get to that in just a little bit here. The other game last night, we had the Knicks going to Portland. Pretty much went down as we'd expected. Carmelo Anthony missed the game due to his knee injury. He headed back to New York to get that drained. Not sure why they didn't just do that at the beginning, you know, to get him back on the court a little bit sooner, but they finally gotten it taken care of, so we'll see. He's currently listed as questionable for Sunday at the Clippers. And then Tyson Chandler also missed this one with a knee, but, you know, he's expected to be back. So when you have the Knicks starting Kenyon Martin, Kurt Thomas, and Chris Copeland, you know, not really the best roster to compete, especially Portland's always a tough place to play, you know, never mind what their record is. You know, they got some heroics from J.R. Smith off the bench, 18 points in the fourth quarter, actually brought the Knicks back to within 4, but, you know, Blazers just went on a big run from that point on to close it out. Damian Lillard continues to be the story in Portland, finished with 26 points, 10 assists. Does he pretty much have the Rookie of the Year trophy locked up at this point?
Oh, completely. Yeah, I mean, early in the midseason, I wanted to say that Anthony Davis, who was certainly playing better, and I still think will be the better player in 3 or 4 years, could make a run at it. And the other guy who was playing great until he got hurt was Andre Drummond. He was the guy, if they'd just given him some run, you know, I don't know what the fascination is with Jason Maxiel and who he has pictures of, but he shouldn't be playing. Right. He was playing more than Drummond, and it was silly. But then Drummond, you know, his back started giving him trouble, and he's due back probably in the next week or so. But nonetheless, I think those kind of breaks in the schedule when you're just not playing for a month just kills your chances at those kinds of awards.
Well, you know, obviously it's easier to sort of look at what's going on right now and say, well, you know, Lillard is obviously the true talent, but you just mentioned you thought Davis might be, you know, a better player in a few years once he gets some NBA reps under his belt. What are you seeing with him that makes you think he might emerge into that star-type talent?
Well, he plays such a smart game, A, defensively. Lillard struggles defensively and still, and, you know, he's putting up a lot of points, but they have to cover for him on that end. Davis is a great defender, good shot blocker, and he just plays smart basketball. I mean, he makes really wise cuts to the basket. He finishes well. He's, you know, freakishly long, but he has a really nice touch from the outside. And I think you're starting to see him fit what is a different game. He's not kind of a standard guy, especially a guy who wins Rookie of the Year. We're going to throw him the ball in the wing, and he's just going to dominate. He's not that kind of superstar, but he is a guy, especially when paired with somebody who can do some shot creation, who's going to get a lot of points working off the ball, working around the basket, and just playing, you know, just like he can, like I said, he can knock it down from the outside. He can get it, you know, inside once he gets some handles. I think that there's a lot of room for improvement. And I've just, every time I watch him, I'm more and more impressed with how he sees and reacts within the game.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch that development. And, you know, with Lillard, I think, you know, the defense, that's the number one thing with guards coming into the league. They have to learn the NBA level of defense. They have to learn the team defense. You know, do we go over the screens, under the screens, that type of stuff. Really, the only thing I had to nitpick about last night was his shot selection. You know, he made all 7 of his shots inside the three-point arc. But beyond that, he was 4 for 11. So, and some of those were early in the shot clock where he brought the ball up himself. And then, you know, dribbled around for 5 seconds or so and decided to just launch it. So obviously that's not a great style of basketball, you know, not super team oriented. But again, the coaches may endorse that at this point because, you know, they don't have a ton of other options. But yeah, definitely going to be interesting to see. I don't think you can go wrong picking either one of those guys. I think they're both going to be, you know, pretty good talents going forward.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think you go wrong with him. I'll throw Drummond in there. I think you'll do great with any of them. I think Davis may have the highest ceiling, and with Drummond, like you said, with Lillard, I think his shot selection and stuff will grow as he does. I mean, he spent 4 years in college, and in those 4 years in college, his coaches probably encouraged him to take that kind of jump shot, because if there's not much, you know, at least now he's got LaMarcus Aldridge, and he's got some other guys who can play on that roster. Portland's a nice young team. You know, they get a couple more pieces there, and that can be an up-and-coming team in the West, too. They are really young.
All right, well, we started to talk about the injuries a little bit. We mentioned, you know, the Spurs with Tony Parker. They're going to get him back soon, and, you know, they're going to win games even without him, just given the system that they run. What about the New York Knicks? Carmelo Anthony, we're not sure how long he's going to be out for. They, you know, again, they said questionable for Sunday at the Clippers. I'm not sure what the hurry is at this point in a game that they're, you know, probably not likely to win anyway. What's your take on the Knicks with Carmelo? You know, how much trouble are they in terms of where they might fall in the Eastern Conference standings before the end of the regular season?
Well, they are falling back a little bit, and they have to be worried. You know, they're right now the 3 seed. They're a game and a half up on the Nets, who are the 4 seed, and you don't want that 4th seed. A, you get a tougher first round matchup, even though they would be the home. You know, they could very well end up with the Bulls, who could very well have Derrick Rose back, or they could get the 5 seed and get like maybe Boston, who's a, you know, not going to be an easy out just because of the guys on that roster, even without Rondo. That's a tougher first-round matchup. And then if you're the 4-5 seed and you win that, you get the Heat. You know, you'd much rather be the 2-3, and that's how you've got to get through. You know, that's the way through. They need Carmelo's offense to keep their offense clicking. What really is killing them, and it really hurt them last night, is they can survive for a little while without him if they had Amari Stoudemire coming off the bench, but he's not there. And if they had Tyson Chandler, I mean, the Raymond Felton Tyson Chandler pick and roll can be an effective weapon for a game or two, you know, for a stretch.
Sure.
But they didn't have that either because Chandler's out. So they were really left without anybody who could, outside of J.R. Smith, who can, you know, create his own shot, and Felton, who was having an off night. They just don't have the shot creation. The bigger problem is, to me, if you're the Knicks, is their defense is average, and that's why they're 20-20 after that hot start. I mean, their last 40 games, they're 20-20. They are an average team. And I think even when they get everybody healthy, if they don't start defending much better, I'm not sure they get out of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, their history isn't really going to help them, right? They won one playoff game in the last, 2001, I think.
Yeah.
You know, before last season. So, you know, they're not a team with a rich playoff history. You know, they did get an improved game out of Marcus Camby. Again, we're talking about guys that are 100 years old, but Camby got double-digit rebounds in only like 19 minutes last night. So maybe he's getting a little bit healthier. I'm still not sure why Rasheed Wallace is still taking up that roster spot. It doesn't look like he's going to come back anytime soon. What do you think about the prospects of Stoudemire returning by the playoffs and being able to contribute at all?
Yeah, I mean, he may well be back right around the start of the playoffs, but I think you just asked the bigger question. I mean, how much is he really going to contribute? How much can he come in and really – he was hitting a little groove. He was actually playing pretty well right before the injury creeped up again. So, but it took him a while to get into that, and if it takes him a while again, you know, that's – like I said, that's going to be a tough first-round matchup, whether they're the three or the four. They're going to have to work for it because they are going to get – you know, maybe Atlanta, who still got some talent on that roster and still can score inside. You know, they're going to have Josh Smith and Al Horford, or maybe it's Boston, or maybe it's Chicago, but I don't think any of those go quietly. You know, you're going to have to work for those. And I'm just not sold the Nets. I mean, the Knicks have that. I'm not sold on the Nets either, but I'm not sold the Knicks right now are defending well enough and just can find that gear that they had. You know, it looked like they had earlier in the season, but when you have an older bench, you know, they have to have Camby play well. They have to have Jason Kidd play well. They have to have Prigioni come in and give them quality minutes and so on and so forth. And with you have an older bench like that, I don't know, you know, maybe they'll be better in the playoffs with a little more rest, but those guys look worn down and the whole team looks worn down. Copeland is the one guy I like in there. I'd like to see him get a little more run.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. Who is in and who isn't healthy for the Knicks is going to basically determine, you know, their playoff fate. Well, the other big injury news of the week was obviously Kobe Bryant going down at the very last play against the Hawks the other night. It was a bad loss for the Lakers to Atlanta anyway. Hawks playing without Josh Smith and Jeff Teague. That's a game they needed to get even the night after that emotional, quote-unquote emotional, return to Orlando from Dwight Howard. Bigger loss, obviously, is Kobe Bryant. We're not sure how long he's going to be out. Big talk about, was it a dirty play or not by Donte Jones? How did you see it?
I don't think it was. Let me put it this way. I don't think it was intentional. I don't think Donte Jones went in and, you know, went Bruce Bowen on him and slid under him. I enjoyed, by the way, Bruce Bowen on TV calling him out for that. I found that ironic.
Yeah, that was great.
but I don't think it was, you know, or, you know, Jalen Rose, from who's admitted that, you know, he did that to Kobe back in 2000. I don't think it was intentional. If you watch him, A, he gets beat a little bit, then he tries to come in and contest. Kobe created a little space, but as soon as the shot goes up, he's turned. He's not watching Kobe. I think he spun around to see what would happen, and I think it was incidental. I think the bigger issue for me, the more I've thought about this and talked to a long conversation with Henry Abbott of True Hoop and some other people with this about this, where I'm coming down is if the league just has to crack down on this period. I mean, this isn't – Kobe got injured, but we've seen a lot more of this on closeouts in recent years, and the league is not consistent on calling it. They don't have the referees really watching for it and looking at it, and I think it's something that they've got to address, if not immediately, certainly by next season, because you're going to start losing guys. You know, you're going to start losing – guys like Kobe and other players for an extended period. You know, it's one thing when you're driving the basket and you happen to, you know, you kind of leap forward and land on a guy's foot. It's another thing when you're shooting a fadeaway jump shot or you're out at the 3-point line and some guy kind of slides up under you. The league has got to be better about calling that and giving guys a place to land on their jump shots.
Yeah, I would agree pretty much with all that. I don't necessarily think it was a premeditated dirty play from Donte Jones. That being said, when you have a history of doing that type of stuff, and you have a history specifically with Kobe doing it, obviously that's going to, you know, that's not going to look good. You know, when something like that happens, doesn't help that Kobe himself gets, you know, tells reporters afterwards that it was dirty and a wrong play, gets on Twitter, does the same thing. That's not helping, but I would agree. I don't think it was premeditated. I don't think he said, I'm going to go out there and make sure to slide under Kobe and make sure he gets hurt. At the end of the shot. If you're
going to slide up Kobe and get him hurt for the game, you do it way earlier in the game rather than the last shot.
First quarter might have been a better time to do that. You know, neither one of us are doctors, obviously, clearly, but that picture of Kobe's swollen ankle was floating around yesterday on social media. Doesn't look good, looked pretty bad. How long do we anticipate Kobe being out for, given his propensity to bounce back and play through injuries no matter what?
You know, with Kobe, it'll be a matter of, A, the doctor, you know, Gary Vitti, the Laker trainer, and the other medical people telling him he can't make it worse, because that's kind of where Kobe is. When he had those horrific finger injuries and played through them anyway, the doctors kept saying, well, you can't make it worse. And he said, okay, it's just pain, and he'll deal with it.
Right.
Ankles, though, are a little more tricky, because once you've sprained it, it is more susceptible to a second sprain until it's fully healed. And Kobe's obviously not going to wait until it's, you know, all the way 100%. He's not taking 3 weeks off here. But, you know, there's braces and stuff he can wear, but he's got to be concerned about coming back too soon and making this more of a chronic issue, because if you've watched the Lakers lately, they don't have a margin for error. Not even regularly, frankly, right now in the regular season, trying to fight for that last, you know, one of those last playoff spots in the West, they really don't have it come the playoffs. They have to have 100% Kobe to have any shot. And he's got to figure out how to walk that line. But I think, you know, it's Kobe. I expect we'll see him back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and, you know, the problem is that the Lakers haven't sealed that last playoff spot yet. And their last seven games, while most of them are at home, those are against tough teams. If you look at more of the immediate future, I mean, they got the Pacers Friday night on the road. That's not a game that the Lakers are probably going to win anyway. So, you know, Kobe should sit that one out. I mean, there's no hurry to get back. Let's give it at least a couple extra days to rest. After that, the schedule softens a little bit for the next few games. They're home against Sacramento, at Phoenix, home against the Wizards. That's another three games that he could easily just decide to say, you know what, I don't need to, you know, push it. It would be best to get healthy. Then they go on the road against, you know, there's a couple tough games. It's at Golden State's a tough one. Then they're at Minnesota. At Milwaukee's going to be tough. Then at Sacramento. That takes us to the end of March. So I definitely would, you know, as someone that follows the Lakers closely, likes to root for him, I definitely would rather see Kobe sit the next few games during the soft part of the schedule so that he's ready for when things get tough and they're really going to need those wins to lock up that playoff spot.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. It looks like the Lakers will get Pau Gasol back probably by Monday in Phoenix, if not sooner. And that becomes interesting of both, look, especially if Kobe's out, they could use the firepower. But even with him back, I mean, on paper they become a better team, but there was questions of fit. Now the Lakers are playing differently. I mean, they're really not playing a D'Antoni system anymore, not in the classic sense. So it'll be interesting to see how they fit Pau Gasol back in. But they could certainly use his scoring if Kobe's out.
Well, and then one other thing sort of with the Lakers and Kobe being out, you know, Steve Nash has done a great job of just kind of fitting in with the Lakers this season. You know, he's tried to be a little bit of an emotional leader, but on the court, he's pretty much deferred to Kobe, you know, the majority of the season. He's playing off the ball. He'll jump in and take over for brief stretches where he'll hit three or four shots, but nothing over the course of the game. I think this would be a great opportunity for Nash to just, you know, show what he can do. You know, we saw it in Phoenix the last couple seasons where he's basically dragging a team, you know, not a great team offensively, you know, to within playoff contention, within a game or two of the playoffs by the time the season was done. You know, Nash is still capable of doing that. He's capable of putting up 20 points, dishing out 15, 16 assists. I think this would be a great time for him to maybe pull Kobe aside and say, hey, schedule's a little soft. I got this for a few games. Make sure you get right.
Yeah, exactly. And look, before the season, one of the things we really talked about being potentially dangerous and really hard to stop was a Nash-Dwight Howard pick and roll. Howard kind of fought that and wanted balls in the post, but he's kind of accepted that he needs to be rolling more. And frankly, his numbers are just always better on the roll. He is devastating going to the rim. He's got great hands. He can finish. Just run that play about a zillion times, and there aren't good teams that are going to be able to stop that, let alone some of the teams coming up on their schedule.
All right, and then the final injury update here. Derrick Rose, obviously a lot of talk's been going down about when he's going to make his return. He's been medically cleared, but doesn't quite feel ready. Bulls seem to need him now more than ever. They lost by 42 points to the Sacramento Kings. So that's really not a good sign of a playoff team or a team that's, you know, ready to give 100% intensity every single night. I think Thibodeau's style kind of wears them down as the season goes on. He plays his stars 40-plus minutes a night, and they always have to win on the defensive end of the floor because they just don't have any offensive firepower. So I think as we're getting into the stretch run here, it's starting to wear thin on these guys. Rose seems like he's getting closer. The language Thibodeau's using with the press is changing. The most recent one was he said he's unlikely to play tonight, Friday night, reported by our own CSN Chicago. What are your thoughts on Rose's return? He's got to be coming back, I would think, pretty soon. And then what's that going to do for this Bulls team?
Well, I think it helps them a lot. I mean, like you said, their offense is just dreadful. And if it can just be average, because you're not – I mean, look, Derrick Rose isn't going to be quite himself, and you can't expect him to be. But if he can just improve their offense to average, they became, you know, a much tougher team. But I think you also hit the nail on the head with this. Thibodeau has got to take a book out of the Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers, you know, Phil Jackson back in the day playbook. Rest guys down the stretch. Give Noah nights off. Give Dang nights off. You know, get your guys healthy and right, because that matters. Especially, they're going to come in as a middle seed wherever it is. That matters so much more. Just being healthy, just being right. I mean, look at Boston last year. It matters more about having your guys playing their best and being ready to go. You've got to get Rose back for some of those games just to get a flow back. But I don't really have a problem. I know there's a lot of people in Chicago who are frustrated and want to see him kind of go Kobe, go, you know, fight through this and come back. But to me, when you have a 24-year-old guy who's an MVP, you wait. You know, this isn't. You don't have to win this year. You've got him for 5, 6 years, 10 years as a franchise anchor. So is, you know, being patient sucks, but I just don't think that there's another option. You've got to wait for him to be ready.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with all of that. Last thing we want to get into here, Miami Heat, you know, suddenly sort of below the radar almost, have won 20 straight games. You know, people tend to lose interest after once you get past 10, 12, 15. People are like, yeah, whatever, it's the Heat. You know, they're the best team in the league. We know this. What's impressed you most about this Miami Heat winning streak?
Well, I think they're doing it with defense again. That's the end of the floor where they've really cranked it up. They're pressuring you out on the perimeter. And then that's kind of what they did to Oklahoma City last year. It's just tough to deal with their athleticism out on the wings and the pressure they can bring. And you think you can, like, oh, we'll get them with their soft middle and we'll score inside. It's not that simple. I mean, Chris Anderson, Joel Anthony are – they're there because they can defend a little. You know, they're not there to put up points. So I they're doing everything they need to. It's you know, it's interesting too. I think you saw the Heat coast early in the season. Now that they've got this eight game lead over the number two team in the East, I think they'd be coasting again. I think they'd have the foot off the gas and just be kind of blowing some games they shouldn't blow if they didn't care about the streak. I think they're fighting now and playing better, and they'll be better in the playoffs for it because they're committed in a way that they probably wouldn't be otherwise. They'd be just waiting for the playoffs to start.
Yeah, it's almost like it gives them something to play for, right? I mean, exactly. You know, something to focus on. As far as when the streak will end, you know, maybe one time in the next three games. I mean, it would seem to be the most likely when you look at the schedule. They're at Milwaukee with their next one. Bucks always have played Miami tough.
Exactly. And the Bucks with that guard rotation of Brandon Jennings and Monta Ellis and J.J. Redick are capable of beating just about anybody for one game on one night because they've got shooters. Like, they can just get hot. Brandon Jennings can be hot and cold. Monta Ellis can be hot and cold. But if you get those guys going or even just get one of them going, they are fully capable. And Bucks have a nice little roster aside that. I mean, you know, Ilyasova and some other guys who can play a little. Sanders, they can for a night beat them. It's a real threat.
Yeah, and the Bucks have already beaten the Heat once this season, and they took them to overtime in Miami earlier in the season. After that, the Heat are in Toronto for one of those whack one in the afternoon games. So anything's possible when you get that. And then they're at Boston, and we know the Celtics, you know, with their style, especially at home, they're going to give Miami some trouble. If Miami gets through those three games, you know, they could cruise for a while. So it'll definitely be interesting to see.
Yeah, the schedule softens up after that. I've always pointed to Boston on the second night of a back-to-back. as a tough one for the Heat. That's the kind of game where the opponent will be up. The opponent's got talent, and you're a little soft on the second night of a back-to-back. I think that that's shot. If not, like you said, if not there, they could get to the Spurs. They would have a 29-game winning streak getting to the Spurs, and they could easily run. It gets pretty soft after that. They could easily run to 29.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And, Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.